can all listen to the Sunny Side of Sports.
Great show, bro. This is Sunny Side of Sports.
Right here on the Voice of America.
Voice of America.
This is VOA Sunny Young in Washington. Welcome to the Sunny Side of Sports. If you tuned in to Tuesday's show, you heard me report how the National Basketball Association is in talks with the Walt Disney Company about restarting its suspended season in late July in Orlando, Florida. The potential plan would see the NBA hold games at a single campus, the ESPN Wide World of Sports Complex in Orlando. The NBA's Board of Governors and League Commissioner Adam Silver are expected to formally present formats later this week for resuming the season. The NBA suspended play in mid-March, becoming the first major North American professional sports league to halt action because of the coronavirus pandemic. Since then, one big NBA star says he's tried to stay connected with his teammates. My VOA colleague, Jim Stevenson, reports.
The National Basketball Association led the way with postponed games because of coronavirus, and since March 11th, the league still has no clear plan for a return. Golden State Warriors superstar Stephen Curry says he's learned a lot about how team relationships are forged and grown.
I'm so used to having, you know, that drive to the practice facility and, you know, the 4 to 5, 6 hours that we're at the gym, and we're, it's just kind of natural conversation, and things start, you start to get to know people just over time because you really can't force that stuff. And so that's kind of taken away. And so it's been difficult. I think it's been eye-opening to me just how important those relationships are to what we do, you know, on the court. It's not just about putting talent together. It's about, you know, that chemistry and whatnot.
Curry admits he could have approached the layoff better with respect to communicating with his teammates.
I haven't been doing a great job of it, I think. And I hold myself to a high standard in terms of leadership. And so trying to find ways to have good balance, but keep checking in on, you know, the young guys who I can't imagine when I was a rookie coming in to this league and trying to figure everything out. And, you know, you get hit with, you know, the postponement of the season.
The two-time most valuable player and three-time NBA champion said the team now regularly uses video chats to catch up and take part in virtual group workout sessions to ensure that they're connected.
We don't even talk really basketball. It's just like, hey, what's going on in everybody's individual lives? We do some workouts twice a week where everybody can at least be connected on that front, knowing we're doing the same stuff. And big picture, there are a lot of things that are way more important than basketball in terms of, you know, us getting through this virus and families going through a lot of hardships. But when basketball does come back, we have a prime opportunity to reclaim where we were, and it's going to come with a lot of hard work, and it's going to look entirely different. But hopefully everybody's buying into it and doing whatever you can in this meantime to make sure you're well.
That's Golden State Warriors basketball star Stephen Curry, and thanks to my VOA colleague Jim Stevenson for that report.
OT greetings. This is Ezine Kalu, point guard for the Nigerian Women National Basketball Team. You're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America. Thank you.
Thank you, Ezine. Well, we don't have the Olympic Games in Tokyo to brighten our summer this year, but our athletics reporter in London, the energetic Andy Edwards, has continued to roam through his library of sports books at home. And Andy has found a source of discussion which goes back 2,500 years and brings us right to the present day. Yes, Andy wants to talk about the Olympic Games, ancient and modern. And I know from visiting Andy's home in North London during the Olympics in 2012 that history of all kinds is one of his key interests. Sporty greetings from Washington, Andy.
And greetings from London, Sonny. Yes, history in general is one of my big interests. And I'd like to start the discussion by highlighting what the ancient Olympic Games in the Greek world signified over 2.5 millennia ago, then take us on a journey to how the modern Games began, also in Athens in 1896, and on to the present day. The more I've studied this, the more I think that first impressions of what it was like long ago and their link to the modern games needs a careful approach, avoiding jumping to conclusions.
Andy, the ancient Olympic Games in Greece, what would you say was a big difference compared to the games of today?
A key difference was that the ancient games were connected to religion. Performing athletic events was considered by the Greeks to be a form of worship or ritual. They were commonly done as part of funeral rites. The ancient Greeks considered that their gods and goddesses had human traits. They wanted to hunt, run, jump, or throw. So these games had a high status, quite apart from discussing who might win. And here's an example. Alexander the Great, on his deathbed, is reputed to have said words to the effect that the funeral games to honour me are going to have to be something special. And this was in the light of his achievements in conquering so much of the known world.
Andy, do you have a date for when the ancient Olympics began and came to an end?
The generally accepted date is 776 BCE, that's before the birth of Christ. And the games were held in various parts of the Greek world, the most notable being at Olympia or Delphi. The various venues might have varied in terms of events or disciplines held, but they were overall similar in having running competitions as well as what we would now call field events, but also chariot racing. They were closed down by the Roman Emperor Theodosius in 393 AD, in large part because they were associated with the ancient gods, and the Roman Empire had become Christian.
Andy, give us a flavor of what spectators at the ancient Olympics would have seen. Would it have differed much from sitting in a modern stadium?
Well, for a start, only men were allowed to take part and spectate, and all the competitors were naked. There are various stories about why participants competed without clothes, but a plausible one concerns how they used to wear shorts, and then one competitor slipped during a running race. It led to another runner being tripped, so it was decided that in future, no clothes at all. It was also part of the Greeks' attitude to themselves and how they differed from those they called barbarians, which means not speaking Greek. The Greeks did not feel embarrassed by nudity, certainly not in men.
Andy, what about the ancient Olympics athletics venue? Would it look different to what we know today?
In quite a few ways, but not entirely foreign to modern eyes. We get the word stadium from the Greek stade, which denotes a straight of about 185 meters or 200 yards. There were running events, but they tended to be over the shorter distances. The longest was the dolichos, which comprised 24 stades or just under 5,000 meters. And there was a sharp 180-degree turn for any race longer than one stade, nothing like the modern oval setting. The greatest prestige in running was given to the winner of the stade, the race over 200 yards. Another race was for two stades, 400 yards or about 400 meters, and another over 400, but you had to carry a shield.
You mentioned the prestige of winning. Did ancient Olympic champions earn big cash prizes?
The champions of the ancient games have been recorded as winning money, as much as the equivalent of a year's average earnings. There were no medals awarded, but instead they received laurel wreaths or garlands. And the high profile of being a winner certainly helped them in later life. The most notable prize in the field events was the pancration, a form of wrestling with hitting with a clenched fist also permitted. It was almost a nothing bar scrap, since biting and gouging also took place, even though they were illegal. One winner was awarded the prize posthumously, since his opponent had him on the ground in a stranglehold, but he refused to yield, managed to secure a leg hold on his opponent and forced him to yield, but still died from the effects of the strangle. He was considered a worthy champion indeed, and the laurel wreath placed on his head, dead though he was.
Andy, let's move closer to the present day. How did the revival of the Olympic Games in 1896 come about?
In the late 19th century, a Frenchman, Pierre de Coubertin, was keen on all things Greek and wanted to improve the overall health and vigor of his own nation. He looked for inspiration across the Channel to Britain and the system of sports at the English public schools. Those schools placed the study of Latin and Greek at the heart of their curriculum. De Coubertin created the image in his mind of the noble youth who did sport for its physical and spiritual benefits, combining this with how he viewed the ancient world. At the same time, sports such as running, match races of one man against another, had become popular in Britain, but were bedeviled by gambling and match-fixing, occasionally leading to riots. That's how an image of a pure, ancient pursuit of honour on the sports field grew up, untainted by money. Of course, it meant that only those who could afford not to work could participate in such sports, since they were open only to the amateur.
Finally, Andy, when I look at the athletic events in Athens in 1896, I see one you're very familiar with. Yes, one you've covered for the Sunny Side of Sports numerous times over the past 20-plus years. I'm talking about the marathon. But Andy, the marathon was never part of the ancient Olympics. Who thought of this?
Another Frenchman, Michel Breal, wanted to create this foot race. Till then, marathon meant the battle fought by the Athenians against the invading Persians in 490 BCE, and the legend of the messenger Pheidippides running back from the battle with news of victory, only to suffer a fatal collapse once he delivered the news. That first Olympic marathon, won by the Greek runner Spyridon Lewis, created its own niche in sports history. The epic tests, which the ancient Greeks would have considered bizarre as a sporting event. We can also see in Athens in 1896 the spread of sports growing: fencing, shooting, cycling, tennis and swimming. Sports such as cricket, rugby, tug of war and golf came and went from the next games in Paris in 1900. And look at what we can expect in Tokyo next year, if it takes place, which is by no means certain. 33 sports in all, 5 of them either new or returning after a break. They are sport climbing, surfing, skateboarding, karate and baseball and softball, the latter two returning after being part of the Beijing Olympics in 2008. These days, the subject of who qualifies as an amateur and therefore eligible no longer applies. The concept has become redundant. But then, those ancient Olympians, including the dying winner in the fearsome event which was the Pancratian, knew they might enjoy prestige and much more as their reward 2,500 years ago.
Thanks, Andy. And we look forward to you perusing your extensive sports library for more chats in the days ahead. That's the energetic Andy Edwards speaking with us from London.
Yes, sporting greetings. This is three-time Olympian and Beijing 2008 Olympic medalist Chika Chukwumerijie. You're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America. Thank you.
Thank you, Chika. Ethiopia's three-time Olympic champion, Kenenisa Bekele, says he's been enjoying some aspects of coronavirus lockdown life. Kenenisa is a member of the NN running team. And at the NN running team website, Kenenisa says, and I quote, "I enjoy spending more time at home with the family. I miss this life. To get to spend more time with my three children, it makes me very happy." Kenenisa says he and his son and two daughters enjoy watching TV, reading books, and playing video games together. Meanwhile, the reigning Olympic champion and world record holder at the marathon distance, Kenya's Eliud Kipchoge, is also a member of the NN running team. Eliud says he's delighted that his wife, Grace, and three children have embraced a daily 20-minute morning run during lockdown. Eliud says, and I quote, "They have been training and it has been tremendous." And on that note, I think it will be tremendous if Eliud Kipchoge and Kenenisa Bekele race each other in early October in the London Marathon. They had been set to race last month in the British capital, but the London Marathon was postponed to October 4th because of the COVID-19 crisis. Elsewhere in African athletics, Kenya's former world javelin champion Julius Yego believes Tokyo 2021 will be his final Olympics. In an interview with the Chinese news agency Xinhua, the 31-year-old Yego said, and I quote, "At the 2016 Rio Olympics, I got the silver medal because of injury. I was sure to win gold in 2020, but here we are, the games are still postponed." And Julius goes on to say, "I still hope that I will achieve my dream of getting an Olympic gold next year because I believe it will be my last appearance at the games." I'm Sonny Young in Washington, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on The Voice of America.
My name is Joshua Cheptegei of Uganda, a world champion, a Devo Commonwealth Games champion, a world cross country champion, a three-time world record holder of the 5K, 10K, and 15K. My message to the athletes all over the world and other people is that keep a distance and follow the guidelines given to you by your governments and the health ministries, because the COVID-19 is really a serious disease.
VOA brings you the best in African music on the African beat. African Beat showcases the latest and the greatest of contemporary African music, from bobo music to hip life, bonga flavor to soukous, Afrobeat to ndombolo and makossa to kwaito. The African Beat on VOA has it all. And it's happening right here, Mondays through Fridays at 09:05 and 20:05 UTC, right after the international news.
Thanks, David. That's our African Beat host, David Vandy. A British Paralympic table tennis player is using his medical training to help coronavirus patients in London. Joining us with that story is my VOA colleague, Gwen Ooten. Sporty greetings, Gwen.
Sporty greetings, Sonny. British table tennis player Kim Daybell had planned to take leave from his job as a junior doctor to focus full-time on his trip to Tokyo. But news of the Olympic postponement upended his quest to bring home gold. Now the two-time Paralympian is standing on the front lines in the fight against the coronavirus. Daybell spoke to Reuters News from Whittington Hospital in North London and said going from Olympic athlete to full-time doctor was not an easy transition.
Bit of a shock for me, because I was obviously working part-time before. I was working 3-4 days a week. And now it's, working kind of the standard week on top, with the on-calls on top. So that's been quite a tough transition. But everyone's got their head down and managed it. And I think a lot of doctors have been off sick, a lot of nurses have been off sick. So I think managing that's been really difficult.
Over 265,000 coronavirus cases have been confirmed in the UK, with over 37,000 deaths. Britain's COVID-19 death toll is the highest in Europe, but the rate of infection seems to be slowing. Daybell said there is a sense of decline in his hospital ward, but his Paralympics training will have to wait until the fight is over.
But I mean, I live in London, and you actually need more space than you think to set up a table and have the space to play, which I don't unfortunately have in our small flat in North London. So I've not been able to train at all. I don't think any of the British athletes, as far as I'm aware, have been able to practice, because obviously it would mean breaking isolation rules to bring coaches in. I've not picked up a bat now for nearly 5 weeks, I think, which is really weird, really, really weird. I've been playing since I was 9, sort of 10 years old. I've been playing every week. So it's a really strange thing. Getting back into it will be tough, but you never really sort of forget that muscle memory, so hopefully it won't be too painful experience.
Daybell was born with a condition called Poland syndrome, which has caused the muscles on one side of his body to underdevelop. But that hasn't stopped him from competing on the world stage. He played in front of his home crowd at the London Paralympic Games in 2012 and represented Great Britain once again at the Rio Games in 2016. The following year, he won a team silver in the European Championships. And Daybell says the longtime camaraderie is what he misses most in the current crisis.
It's been really difficult, especially being away from the squad. I mean, I've got lots of friends within that team. We've been playing together for a long, long time, and I think we were kind of all just coming together to get ready for Tokyo, like one big family, really. And then that was kind of just stripped away. But on top of the games not being happening, we're also not seeing each other and we're not practicing, which is so strange considering I've trained with them through two Olympics now, London and Rio. So they are like a second family. So that's been tough. Not being able to see them, not being able to train together has been difficult.
And while his dream of competing in his third Paralympics has been put on hold, Daybell says a bright spot with the postponement is that eager spectators will be ready to celebrate once the games resume.
I don't think that it'd be an amazing time for a game. I think the world will be crying out for something positive and something to bring everyone together again and celebrate sport and celebrate kind of, all being together and having got over something that's obviously been so worldwide and so far-reaching.
The Paralympic Games have been rescheduled to take place from August 24th to September 5th, 2021. International Paralympic Committee President Andrew Parsons is quoted as saying, "When the Games do take place in Tokyo next year, there will be an extra special display of humanity uniting as one, a global celebration of human resilience and a sensational showcase of sport." And that is all from me for now. Sunny, back over to you.
Thanks, Gwen. That's my VOA colleague, Gwen Uten.
Hi, this is Tatiana McFadden, 17-time Paralympic medalist, 7-time gold medalist, 17-time marathon champion, and you're listening to The Sunny Side of Sports on Voice of America.
In the wake of the coronavirus pandemic, Bob Rivers, Spike O'Neill, Joe Bryant, and friends did a parody of a Beatles song to remind us that washing your hands is good and fun. Let's give it a listen. Wash your hands and no high fives. And on that musical note, we wrap up the May 27th edition of the show. Thank you for tuning in. I'm VOA's Sunny Young in Washington, and that's the sunny side of sports. We'll be right back.
get it.
VOA Africa has built a successful, effective social media strategy through Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, and other digital platforms. We are responding to our audience on the African continent and in the global diaspora. We believe in the power of connection and interaction to bring you news that is comprehensive, accurate, and objective. We see the changes in technology as an opportunity to engage with our audiences about the issues that affect them. At VOA Africa, we don't just report the news, we help shape the conversation on the continent. VOA, your trusted source for news and information.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of Press Conference USA, VOA's newsmaker interview program. Join us each Saturday and Sunday when we talk with authors, analysts, and policymakers who provide fresh insight on topics ranging from U.S. politics and foreign policy to science, culture, and global health. You can listen to Press Conference USA on the radio or online at voanews.com/PCUSA. While you're visiting our website, be sure to subscribe to our podcast. We'd also love to hear from you. Just send an email to pcusa@voanews.com or connect with us on Facebook at facebook.com/CarolCastielVOA or on Twitter at CarolCastielVOA. That's Press Conference USA every Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.
Heather Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Join me every Saturday and Sunday for an hour of awesome African music. Wake up, dance this music. Like to stay on top of new music trends, breakout artists, new releases? Maybe you just love the classic styles and the artists of the past. Or simply the sound and feel of a good beat. Whatever your pleasure, you can get it every week right here on Music Time in Africa. So join me on your local FM station, Saturdays and Sundays at 1500 and 2000 UTC.
VOA's Our Voices television program is about more than just sitting and talking about women's issues.
It's about listening to them
and bringing their opinions to the table and making sure that their voices are heard. Because our lived experiences, our stories, and our voices will help shape the next generation.
Check your local TV listings and join the conversation each week with Our Voices on VOA.
Join your host, Larry London, for Border Crossings, VOA's Worldwide Music Request Hour, every weekday at 1500 Universal. Tune in to hear your favorite songs and artists, win prizes and giveaways, and get the latest scoop from exclusive celebrity interviews. Send in requests to our Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram, or call 202-618-2077 to have your favorite music played for the entire world. Don't miss Border Crossings every weekday at 1500 Universal.